For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Bradley Fuller. The alignment of sun, moon, and earth in a solar eclipse is a spectacular and inspiring event, fit to be captured on camera and in music. I spoke with Dr. Matthew Whitehouse recently, who is not only the observatory manager at the South Carolina State Museum, but also an organist and composer. He's approaching the event of the eclipse from all of these angles. Here are some highlights from our conversation. Matthew, thanks for being here today.
It's great to be here. My pleasure.
So you're the observatory manager at the South Carolina State Museum, and I assume that you and your coworkers are pretty excited about this upcoming solar eclipse, of which parts of South Carolina will have a really nice view.
That is correct. And here in Columbia, we actually see the total eclipse for about 2.5 minutes on the afternoon of August 21st, 2017. Around 2:41 in the afternoon is when totality begins. And at the museum, we will have activities all day that day, including planetarium shows, eclipse viewing, food, special astronomy and eclipse activities. So it'll be a really exciting day for us. At the observatory, the museum has a number of functions. So you can walk right into it pretty much whenever the museum's open to look at the sun safely. We have a special solar telescope. You can come on a Tuesday night and see the night sky. And then we also do teacher professional development and school programs for kids visiting on field trips. And it's also capable of distance learning. So we can connect the observatory with classes around the state of South Carolina. So it's educational space that wears a number of hats. And yes, we're very excited with this observatory and planetarium about this eclipse coming up.
You're not only preparing, though, as the observatory manager. If I understand correctly, you have a composition out for organ about this upcoming eclipse.
That's correct. So in my other life, I'm actually an organist and composer. I've always been passionately interested in astronomy and music and in ways I can combine the two, and specifically in using music to help communicate astronomy, to help teach astronomy. And it was in that vein that I actually wrote this piece called Corona, which is a piece that evokes this sort of gossamer outer atmosphere of the sun that's only visible during a total eclipse of the sun. It's called the corona, hence the piece's title, and it's this sort of frilly, streamery outer atmosphere that just pops into view as the moon completely blocks the light of the sun. It's a really spectacular sight. You can only see it during a solar eclipse, a total solar eclipse, so this will be one of those times we get to see that.
How, if you don't mind my asking, do you try to evoke the image of this corona in an audio kind of landscape versus a visual one?
Yeah, and that's one of the interesting things about astronomy is it's so visual, but you can use those visual cues. You can use just the visual, spectacular nature of astronomy to be a creative driver for music. So in this piece, there are a lot of rather frilly, evocative moments that use the colors of the organ to suggest that that gossamer corona surrounding the sun, especially in the early parts of the piece. And then as we move into the middle parts of the piece, it gets quite a bit more intense. We start using the full power of the organ in this kind of crescendo, long scale crescendo. And this is taking that frilliness of the corona and also suggesting what is really one of the great mysteries of solar astronomy. And that is as you're traveling from the core of the sun out to the surface, the temperature drops off as you move closer to the surface of the sun, which makes total sense. But then as you move out into the corona, the temperature starts to increase again, and astronomers don't understand why. So the surface of the sun is about 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit or so, but that jumps to a few million degrees Fahrenheit as you jump out into the corona. And that's suggested in this buildup in the center part of the piece.
Does the organ lend itself to outer space perhaps more than other instruments? I'm thinking about Hans Zimmer's soundtrack to Interstellar perhaps, but also I think some other compositions. Is it an instrument for astronomy?
I think it really is. I don't want to say that it's the best instrument for astronomy, because I think really many instruments can be made to evoke space or the night sky. and in different ways. But I think one of the ways in which makes the organ really great at it is some special features of the organ are, first of all, it's just the sheer number of colors it can produce. The color range of the organ is really almost limitless. The other thing about the organ is that it's capable of holding a sound indefinitely. So if I were to press a key down on the organ and hold that down with, say, a pencil, and then come back 2 hours later, that note would still be sounding. You can just hold sounds and sustain sounds indefinitely on the organ. And also just the sheer power of the instrument and the range of power. And the organ can be very, very quiet, and it can be just thunderously powerful, and it can make that transition very, very quickly. And Corona actually uses both extremes. There's some very quiet moments at the end, and then there's some very dramatic moments using the full power of the organ in the middle.
Let's even step back further a little bit more and consider, what are the connections between music and astronomy in general? Are there some, or would we do well just to let the disciplines stay distinct?
I think that the connections between music and astronomy actually go back to antiquity. And we often hear about the music of the spheres, which is very much an ancient Greek concept. Pythagoras had this idea that the planets, as they move in their orbits, emit tones, and that these tones could follow what we call frequency ratios. So things like maybe one orbit is twice as fast as the other, and that kind of thing. And what Pythagoras saw as a connection between that, or what he kind of came up with, is a connection between that and the lengths of strings. So if you strike a string or pluck a string that's half as long as another string, you're going to get a sound that's an octave higher. From antiquity, music is number, and connecting that with the celestial bodies is where this kind of begins. And then as we move later into history, there are a lot of examples. Certainly Kepler was interested in music. Then we get to William Herschel, widely considered the father of modern astronomy. And Herschel also was a musician. He started off life as a musician, and he wanted to be remembered as a musician, but he kind of found himself getting increasingly interested in astronomy until he did things like discover the planet Uranus. And really is now known as an astronomer and not as a musician.
Might be a hard question, but which would you rather be remembered as?
You know, I don't want to be like William Herschel, who was really now much more remembered for his accomplishments in astronomy. He's sort of known for his musical accomplishments, but I kind of think of myself as both. I'm very much 100% an astronomy educator and museum educator, and 100% composer and organist with this interest in combining the two fields.
Which came first for you, the stops or the stars? I mean, the organ or astronomy?
You know, thinking back to childhood, I think that reflects what I just said about wanting to be 100% both. Is I remember as a child, I was fascinated with both. I was fascinated with the organ and also fascinated with the night sky.
Do you have any advice you might give to young people who are interested in what seem to be very different fields, but perhaps they're being pushed along a line of specialization? You know, they're being told, if you're going to do well in life, you really need to concentrate on this area and, you know, make it something else a hobby at best.
Well, I think that it's really good to not put all your eggs in one basket, especially in this day. I think it's certainly, for me, been really great to be active in both fields in my career. And I think it's really great to go on and pursue both. Maybe if you find that you're drawn more towards the sciences to keep doing music at a very high level, or if you find that you're more drawn towards music, keep up, say, doing things like, if you're interested in astronomy, being an amateur astronomer, being an astronomy educator. I think there's a lot of room for people who want to do multiple things and bring them together in multiple ways. I've certainly found that to be true in my professional life.
I once read an article that suggested that people of a scientific inclination were really held to a high standard when it came to being familiar with the arts and humanities, but that people of a more artistic nature were given a lot of leeway when it came to being scientifically illiterate. Have you found this to be the case, or are both sides kind of guilty, or is that just a fiction altogether?
You know, I think that there are certainly a number of scientists who are very well versed in the arts and humanities, and maybe were active themselves as musicians or artists. There's certainly a number of examples of that through history. Herschel's not the only one. I think of Einstein, who is a violinist. I think that we have kind of siloed the fields, and I think that's really good for everyone to pursue as broad an education as possible. I know that going through, my degrees are actually in music, so going through that training process, there isn't as much room in the curriculum, in a, say a music school curriculum, for interdisciplinary study. And I think the more we can branch out, I think it's good to choose a home field and then branch out from there. But I think the more opportunities we have to combine disciplines, the better.
Your investment in an interdisciplinary approach to these fields has led you to speak at a few conferences?
That's correct. So, and not just in the United States, but around the world. I've given presentations at astronomy education conferences where I've talked about combining music and astronomy and using that as a teaching tool. And those have been both very traditional astronomy education conferences like the Astronomical Society of the Pacific, although it has Pacific in its name. That's an organization for astronomy educators from around the country. And I've also been overseas, for example, to a conference called INSAP, or a conference on the inspiration of astronomical phenomena. Several years ago, I presented at that conference in the United Kingdom. I've actually been to some very interesting destinations like Colombia, not Columbia, South Carolina, but Colombia, the South American country, to talk about music and astronomy and the way they're connected from an educational standpoint at a conference called Communicating Astronomy with the Public. So that's one of the things, is both music and astronomy are both very international fields. And I think that ties into the eclipse, because we're going to have people coming from around the world. So here at the museum, we're getting calls as far away as Italy from people who want to come and are going to be bringing groups to Colombia. It's that level of an event. We think that there could be as many as 1 million people visiting our state, and a good chunk of those in the Columbia area. So we're going to have a lot of company for this event.
And now they'll have a soundtrack to listen to as they view the eclipse.
Yes, they will. That's correct.
Well, Matthew, it's been a pleasure having you here today, and I look forward to not only seeing this eclipse, but listening to your composition, Corona.
That's great. And just a few closing thoughts. Number one, we hope for clear skies. And number two, I just have to say this in all of my eclipse presentations, it's not something to be scared of. It's safe to view it, but you just need to follow proper eye protection. That means use eclipse glasses. Don't use sunglasses. You want to use approved eclipse glasses to actually look up at that sun.
A very important public service announcement, I think.
Yes, that I always have to do whenever I talk about the eclipse.
Matthew, thanks.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
An interview I had recently with Dr. Matthew Whitehouse, South Carolina State Museum Observatory Manager, organist, and composer. With roles like those, perhaps it's no surprise that Matthew's musical output would reflect his interest in astronomy. His Corona, the piece about which we were just speaking, is evocative of the sun's outer atmosphere, visible only during a solar eclipse. This is the composer performing the work at Trinity Episcopal Cathedral in Columbia.
Thank you.
Matthew Whitehouse was the organist in that recording, performing his composition, Corona. For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Bradley Fuller.